This is Anderson Penn's podcast, episode 196 for Tuesday, June 21st, 2016. This is Brian.
This is Lisa.
This is the Anderson Penn's Radio Network.
We're going to ink it up tonight. I'm excited.
Are we?
Yeah. Well, I just saw in the chat, Eric says he has cookies.
Oh, man. All right, folks, sure. We're done here. We're done here.
He didn't share. What's up with that?
I'm reading the Kit Kats in the fridge after this.
There you go.
So here we are.
Yep. So happy belated Father's Day to all of you fathers out there and mothers who act as fathers.
Absolutely.
Did you get anything?
I did get something.
Did you? You got some peace and quiet. You got to go take a drive in the vet. What else did you get?
You know, the day ended up being really kind of busy. You know, it's one of those situations where you have a nice day off, and it ends up being one busy thing after another, and washed both cars, mowed the lawn.
Took the storms off and put the screens up.
But I did get this beautiful little guy here, the Pilot metallic blue Vanishing Point. It's got the matte black trim and the black nib. And
you've been hoarding that for a while.
Well, it's been on my desk as soon as we've discovered that the metallic Vanishing Points are being discontinued. I like that one a lot. We happen to have just broads are not as common, and I thought I would grab the broad nib. And I don't know why I have not used a broad Vanishing Point nib before today. And I've been using Vanishing Points going back quite a long ways, probably 15 of my 18 years collecting. And this is the first time I've had a broad nib, and it's, I will say it's fantastic. It's really, really a great, great nib. Well, I think I caught you using it once.
Under duress.
Under duress.
All that means is that there are more fine nibs for me, okay. And that's a beautiful thing.
No, it's a great pen. I really love the color. We'll see. And people always ask, how does the matte black finish hold up on the Vanishing Points? And now I'll be able to give an answer firsthand, because usually they hold up fairly well, but we'll see how it holds up. So, also, Eric and I took a trip to one of the local antique malls. I have not been in quite some time. It takes so much time, and there's usually very little fruit for the labor of going through. But we managed to come across perhaps the cutest pen and pencil set I've ever seen. Now, these are not exactly sets, but they go pretty well together.
They're so cute.
I'm gonna hold it up to the screen here. Let's see if I can get it. Here we go. This is a Peter Pan Midget. It is a black hard rubber eyedropper with a gold-filled overlay, and it's a ring top. And for those that are listening and can't see just how small this is, this pen capped is about the size of a Pilot Con 50 converter. It's tiny. Actually, I've got a. I don't know if it's the smallest pen that I own, but it is 2 3/8 inches long.
I don't know how anyone, even a child with small hands, could really write with it. I mean, it's so tiny. It's cute.
And posted, it is 3 1/8 inch long. It would have to be an eyedropper, right? I mean, you know, Peter Pan did make lever fillers, but there it is, 14 karat flexible nib. I don't know how much you can write with it, but it's an eyedropper. It's cute as all get out. And then along with that, there was right next to it
a companion,
which has a very similar chasing pattern on it. It is a gold-filled pencil, and it's really, really tough to see here. But it's made by the AT Cross Company. So this is when Cross was something else. 1920s vintage. This is slightly bigger than the pen. It is not quite 2 3/4 inches long. But of course, you know, that's it. It's in working order. It's just cute. It's just really a cute little set. The pencil set me back quite a bit. I was a little over my comfort zone there because it was a pencil, but I thought I could probably afford the $5 that the pencil was. And then the pen was still under $20 bill. So, $24, I'm out the door with a nice pen and pencil set.
Yeah, but you can't use them.
You know, maybe I will use them. Maybe I'll use it. Okay. Today is the yesterday was the first day of summer, which means we're up for a new ink challenge. So maybe.
Oh God! You cannot use that for the ink challenge. No.
I mean, you know, if it's really, really great ink, you know, you can fit maybe two drops in this something in this pen. It'll be interesting to see the feed. By the way, extends halfway back into the barrel. So that's interesting, but maybe I'll use it. I'll use it someday. I don't know. But all anyway, right. That was fun. We've got. We thought we'd talk today about the store.
A little bit. We have a number of questions that people ask us consistently in the store and at shows, and we thought maybe we'd put a couple of those together. It's kind of fun to hear the same question and to see the look on people's face when they ask the question. And I think sometimes the answers are maybe not quite what they expect, but.
Yeah, well, I think this is, some of these questions really apply towards people who are just completely unfamiliar with the fact that it exists outside of the BIC world. And some of these are newbie questions as well. So I think, and these are in really no particular order, but I think number one is maybe the most common question, would you say?
I think so, both at shows and at the store.
And that would be, what is the most expensive pen in the store? And the natural corollary, why are these pens so expensive? So I think, seeing some of the price tags in the cases and they see a pen is $50. I think it just blows their mind. And then they see another one that's $450. And then they completely don't understand. And then when I tell them the current most expensive pen in the store, which I think is probably the Sailor King of Pen Arushi Vermilion, I think, is maybe the most expensive pen in the store at $900. I think their head just explodes.
People just look completely shocked or confused, or they keep waiting for Brian to, like, now give them the real answer now that he's given them the punchline to the joke kind of thing. Like, no, pens don't cost that much.
Well, true story. Actually, last week somebody came in and we were talking about the Urushi King of Pen. And sometimes I admit I fall into the habit of, if a pen gets too expensive, I drop the last two digits. So the pen, you know, $500 pen is five and $1,900 pen is 19. And the person I was talking to this pen about said $19. It's $19.
No. So,
19 was expensive. So. The corollary, of course, is why are these pens so expensive? Of course, when you start getting into that stratosphere, you're talking about very specialty celluloids, acrylics, special materials, handwork. You know, Urushi lacquer is, you have 15 separate coats of Urushi. Very time intensive. You know, it can take months to make a pen at that level. So,
No, it's fun to it's fun to see the expression on people's faces, or you know, some of them just outright, you know, call us liars. You know, that can't be true. You know, it is. Sorry.
Yes, yes, it can. Number two usually is.
You know, it's kind of funny, but occasionally people are a little aggressive about it. You know, can you really make a living doing this? And it's generally at the store, and we've got, you know, three or four people working downstairs at any given time, staying busy. You know, the phone's ringing off the hook some days, and it's, you know, how do you stay in business? Can you really make a living? You know, look around.
Somewhere in there, they ask how long we've been in business. And then when we say, okay, yeah, we're going to be 3 years this year, can you really make a living doing this? Well, you know, the last...
well, 3 years at the store.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been online longer and you know, shows. But it's interesting to see the expression on people's face. They don't really think of it as, I guess, a viable option. And yet it's no different than... you know, how many consignment stores do you need in the world, or, you know, how do those people stay in business? Or I've always wondered how grocery stores stay in business when so much of their food has a very short shelf life. Like, how much produce turnover do you have? You know, how do you stay in business when half your stuff goes bad in less than a week? But we do get that question. Can you really make a living doing this? It's interesting.
So, well, it's humbling. So,
yeah, we're blessed. We are grateful every day that we're doing what we're doing and not in a terrible job that we hate with hours that don't work for our life. And so, there you go.
And here we are at 8:12 p.m. still working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Question number three is sometimes not always we hear it quite a bit. Aren't fountain pens only for calligraphy? The answer, or lettering for that matter. The answer, of course, is absolutely not. If anybody saw my handwriting, it's not exactly what you'd call close to what Michael Saul or Michael Ward or any of those people can do.
Art. Oh my God.
You know, it's for daily use. And of course, anybody listening to this probably already knows that. But it's really a common question. I mean, I would say it comes up several times a week. People ask that question.
Number four is kind of fun.
It is. Okay. So I will ask you the answer.
Sure.
What is the best pen to start with?
We get asked that a lot, especially at the store, not as much at shows. People are genuinely intrigued by what we do, what we sell. And so you want to start them off with something that is reliable, dependable, a good brand, but not too expensive, so that if they lose interest or if they drop it, mistreat it, whatever, you're not out too much money. You know, I would never start anybody with a noodler's pen that's a little too much maintenance. Or, you know, some of the cheap Chinese stuff, you can start with a super cheap pen, but that you're not going to get the best experience. And if you have a pen that's finicky and you start writing with it, you may never get past that first day. So what we often recommend is Pilot Metropolitan. For $15, it's just a phenomenal bargain. You get a great writing pen. You've got some fun colors for the body, a metal body, so it's really hard to kill. And then it comes with a cartridge and a converter. I mean, it's got everything you need to get started, and they're sweet little writers.
Absolutely.
We also recommend the Lammy Safari and the All-Star. Now, the only caveat or trick with that is if you don't like the grip section, the triangular-shaped grip section that forces you to hold it properly, then the pen's not for you. But it's, again, inexpensive, good writer. They come in several different nibs, fun colors. You've got the plastic or the metal. And
easily swappable nibs.
Yep, absolutely. Another good pen is the Schaefer 100. Another good value. Company certainly has a very long history. Nice little writer. Nothing usually super fancy and flashy. But for a starter, it doesn't need to be. It just has to be able to start writing when you pick it up. And these do.
Yep. Yeah, they're solid, really solid pen. It's kind of the underdog in the fountain pen world these days. Not a lot of people recommend Schaefer pens, but I think they're really solid pens.
Absolutely. A fairly new one to the scene is the Twisby Eco. For $29, you get a piston filling pen. That's pretty impressive. Solid little writer. Again, nothing fancy, nothing flashy, but a lot of people are intrigued by the piston mechanism.
Yeah, it's fun, and you can watch the ink slosh around your pen. Then you get, you have to play with bottled ink, which of course makes the decision even more complicated, since there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different colors of ink.
Yep.
And last but not least,
The Coico Sport, either the plastic or the All Sport, the metal body, the brass, any of those. They are definitely smaller. So if someone is thinking about a sport, we absolutely always recommend the clip, because if you're going to put it in a shirt pocket, it's going to fall over. But again, a good little writer, solid, dependable. The plastic ones are $25. Fun colors. Some even have patterns. And you've got the Chess or the Guilloche. And just a good little writer. They take international cartridges, which are very easy to find, come in lots of different colors. So you've got quite a few options to play with to get you started and see what you think about fountain pens.
Yeah, we had a couple of, let's just call them write-ins in the chat, other options. I mean, there's a ton of options under $50. You know, Faber-Castell makes a great product, basic and the Loom, real nice pens. Steel nibs, you know, there's just, you could go on and on. It's just a lot of good pens to start with. So, question number five, you just bought yourself one of those pens. What is the best ink for my pen, or in general?
First of all, best is subjective. If you've never used a fountain pen before and someone asks about ink, we usually recommend Aurora. They only make two colors, a nice deep black and a really fun kind of a purpley blue. But they have great flow. And if you've got a pen that is potentially finicky, we always recommend that to someone who's been using pens for a while. That often will cure the problem. But Aurora just is a really good, safe, classic ink.
Yeah, they do two colors. They do them perfect, really. That black is just the darkest black, darkest, safest on the market, period. It's just what it is. Other options include ink made by any major manufacturer of pens. They usually know what they're doing. This includes, of course, Waterman is really a big favorite. Waterman Sailor, Pilot Oroshizuku, Parker Schaefer inks are really great. They're going to be the best bet until if you're not familiar with your pen, using any of those inks will be a great start.
One of the nice things about Waterman, for example, is that it rinses out really easily. And for someone who's new to fountain pens, that's important. If you're trying to change inks, you want to minimize any frustration. And so being able to rinse out one color in order to put a different color in there is really a benefit. And the other thing to do is if you're new to fountain pens and you're trying to figure out what ink to use in a pen, to start with, avoid inks that have particles or dye-intensive inks or inks with extra additives if you're just starting out. Some of those require a little bit more maintenance, and if you are new to pens, you may not take the time or know to take the time to clean out your pen more often. You know, Bay State Blue, I promise, is going to stain your pen. We don't recommend that for newbies. And, you know, particles may confuse people. You get that gorgeous sparkle the first day, and if you don't know to level lamp your pen, then you're going to be confused about why you've got this big lump of particle in your pen and the ink isn't working the way it should.
Do you want to explain lava lamp? Because people don't know what you're talking
about. Inks like the Diamine Shimmertastic and the J. Herbin 1670 anniversary inks, the ones that have particles in them, you need to either rotate your pen if it's been sitting for a while to get the particles back immersed into the fluid, or tip it like a lava lamp. Not like you're shaking a margarita, but just tip it like a lava lamp. So there you go.
We don't
it's have its own hashtag soon. Lava lamp your pen.
Lava lamp your pen. Okay. Probably early as this evening.
There you go.
So those are, I mean, there are lots of questions, lots of inquisitive people coming in asking questions. Those are really, we sat down, we talked about it. It's like the top five for sure. So you want to do some Q&A? We got a couple questions this week. We picked the top three.
Sure.
You want me to start? Becky? Do you want to start? Which one? Are we going to rock, paper, scissors this one? We're going to lava lamp this one?
We're going to lava lamp it, yep. From Becky, she asked, what is shading and how do I get it? When I first saw the question, I looked at Brian and I'm like, I don't do flex. So I don't worry much about shading. But generally, shading occurs with a combination of generally a more flexible nib and lighter colored ink. And as you write, as more ink is placed on the page, the darker the ink gets, it causes kind of a light to dark effect known as shading. It's usually seen with either broad nibs or flexible nibs. Generally with extra fine nibs, you don't get enough ink or enough line variation on the page to see much of a shading effect. Some people love it.
Indeed. Yeah. And you do need good paper. Absolutely. If you have something that's too absorbent, it just sucks the ink right in. It doesn't really need to get some shading. So, let's see. David asks, how do I know if an ink is wet? Well,
it's
if
water,
you,
of course it's wet.
it depends. It depends a lot on the pen. Some inks do flow easier in certain pens other than others. So what works in my pen, what I think is relatively wet in my pen may not work as well in yours. There are some inks that are naturally lubricated. Monteverde and Noodler's Eel inks are specifically engineered to perform better in outside of that, the truth is you don't really know until you try the combination of the pen and your ink. I mean, there are some that, I mean, you may even try a Monteverde ink and it may even be dry in your pen. So it's a tough question. It's a question, but it's for sure.
Well, there are some that are just that have generally really good flow. Like Aurora, most people consider to be more wet because it has such good flow. It does take a hair longer to dry. Like Brian said, Monteverde ink is really good. It's made with their ink treatment formula, which makes it lubricated. Again, I find it to be they're nice inks. I like them.
Yeah, they are. They're very, you know, people don't talk about them much because they're not. They don't come in a glamorous bottle. They don't come in a glamorous box. The colors are nice. The Bordeaux, the Burgundy is nice. You know, and again here. Yeah, the turquoise is real nice. And again, here the paper also plays into effect too. So if your paper is very absorbent, it's not going to be as wet. If you have something like Tomoe River paper or something that's got where the ink just takes a long time to dry on that particular paper, a coated paper, it's going to appear more wet. And I guess it depends on what your definition of wet is. Is it wet on the paper? Or is it wet coming out of the pen? So there's lots of possibilities there, I think. So, Cheryl asks, how should I clean a new dip pen before use? So we're seeing a lot of interest in dip pens lately. You know, some of the Japanese nibs and even some of the vintage stuff that because they have a good deal of flex to them. They're most of them are steel nibs. They're inexpensive. You know, it's easier than, you know, plunking down a couple $100 on a Pilot 912 Falcon. You can get a dip pen and a holder for under $10 delivered to your door usually. But there is some preparation that most people are not aware of.
So, I think people are slowly learning that when you get a new fountain pen, you should probably give it a quick rinse. It helps get any machining oils or residue out of there. But with dip pens, you don't necessarily think of that. It's just a nib and it should be good to go. But there is a couple things that you should do beforehand and just make it as clean as possible.
Well, there are. In the getting machining oils out of your pen thing is somewhat of a myth. I mean, it's a possibility depending on the pen. Mm-hmm. Better quality pens don't necessarily have that, but the fact of the matter with dip pens is because they're steel, they're often coated in an oil dust. So what you have to do is in order to get ink to stick to the nib, you have to get that oil coating off. The easiest way is to take a Q-tip, some dish soap, and scrub your nib, and then rinse it. That's going to remove it's going to help remove any oil that's on the nib, and the ink is going to stay on the nib longer, and it's going to be easier. You're not going to have to dip as much. There used to be an old, and occasionally you see it, to put a nib in a flame to get rid of, you know, the oils. But the problem with that is many of these nibs are tempered, so actually heating them up changes how flexible, make them more brittle. It'll change the properties of the nib. So the best thing, just take a Q-tip, go to your kitchen sink where you got your dish soap and scrub it and then rinse it, and you're good to go.
Scrub it with your not that a Q-tip scrubs very much, but pretty much wipe it on, wipe it off. It doesn't, it's not nearly as much work as it sounds.
Box at once, you know, I mean, you're going to be, or do the whole batch at once, whatever. So that's the top three Q&A this week. Let's hit real quickly a couple new interesting things coming in that are in the store. This week, if any of you are on the, have a very, very interesting selection of Lamy, what they call the Unic, which is a pen that was initially launched in 1984, also designed by the same gentleman who designed the Lamy 2000, very cool pen. The ballpoint especially has a very interesting mechanism. 14 karat nib, very simple looking nib on the fountain pen. It just says 585. It does not have the logo on it, anything like that. Those are new old stock pens from that stationery store. We're slowly digging through that stuff. Also a couple of very slowly. Yeah. Right. A couple of CP1s, and those are cool looking pens too. Lamy has a lot of pens that are very similar, thin pens, but they all have different unique, flavor to them. So the Unique and the CP1, are up this week. And what's there is what's there. That's all. I mean, all the stuff that we put up is all discontinued. You can't find it anymore. It's all new old stock. And also, if you've been following the Wall Eversharp company, recently announced the launch of the DecoBand Demonstrator, which is a massive pen. It's very large, and
these are big.
It's a big pen,
very big pens,
and very cool in a demonstrator. It has a Chilton-style pneumatic filling mechanism, so now you can actually see how that system works. Cool pen. So those are options of the Gold Flex, which is a semi-flex, or the full flexible 14-karat gold nib options. Really a fantastic job that Sid did on those pens. And last but not least, I know you were working hard on this week.
I was.
The Monteverdi Jewelry Executive and the Jewelry Mini recently came out in a, how would you say, quite a distance different than the old Jewelrys and the old Jewelry Minis.
You know, I don't like to speak badly of the dead, but the first generation of the Jewelrys that we carried weren't bad. I like a thinner pen. I thought some of the marbling in the resins was fine. I did really like the striped versions of the Mini, but then they came out with the Candy Jewelry, and I gotta tell you, I was not impressed. They just looked cheap, and the colors were too bright. You know, that's a pen for a teenager look, or just for fun. It's certainly not a more serious pen. And pens don't have to be expensive to be used in a business setting or something that's, you know, not a Hello Kitty kind of look. And I was not impressed with the Candy.
The other problem I think is the, especially with the Jewelry Mini, the plastic was very thin,
mm-hmm,
at the cap, and we were seeing some instances of that plastic cracking because people were posting it and maybe it wasn't going on straight, and there's a lot of stress there. These new Jewelrys in called Jewelry Executive, which is an all metal pen.
These are nice.
They are really sweet.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. I've regained my faith in the Jewelry. The patterns are really cool. There's a black chisel in the Executive, a gunmetal stripe,
barley, gunmetal
line, I think. Yeah. And one that I don't have up on the site yet. It hasn't come in, but I'll get it up this week. A really cool burgundy grid pattern. Those are really, really nice. And then the minis, those are really nice colors too. There's a blue that's very pretty. Actually, that's the blue line. And
blue line. There's a burgundy.
And a burgundy barley. That's really cool. Really, really well done. Very impressed with this round of Jewelry, and I'm just trying to figure out which one I want.
They're a little bit heavier, mm-hmm, and they essentially look like a vintage pen with an overlay. It's very classy. I was shocked when they actually came out with the pen. So, Jewelry Executive takes number 6 nib, so if you do want to put in an extra fine or a stub that's not available, easy swap. Pull it out, pop it in, you're good to go.
Yeah. Very, very pleased with the look and the feel, and especially since it's thinner, just like with some of the Kawakos, you want it to have a little bit more weight to it so that it doesn't feel quite as insubstantial. And these are just really, really well done. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, Mini comes in one nib size only, but kind of a medium. But, you know, it's a nice little pen. So those are up on the blog this week. Little summer solstice action yesterday. Thanks to Chris for his nice work.
He's so talented.
I think last Thursday, Toucan Turquoise. Really a nice looking ink. Nice job by Chris putting that together. It was very, very popular. We got a lot of people commenting on it. So I think the Think Thursday is going well. So
yep, and he's having fun. Our photographer's having fun working with him. I think they look forward to the collaboration time. And we've been impressed with how it's turning out, and we hope that you are as well.
Shout-outs this week. I know we've got a couple. We had a couple of visitors to the store today. I don't see them in the chat.
This is a busy week for company. We had Hector and Connie Padilla come today. Many of you may know Hector from his posts on Facebook and the assorted pen boards. Amazingly talented hands, that man.
He's a fine calligrapher. In fact, he left gifts for everybody. Actually, he was in the store for a couple of hours this afternoon, and then came back toward the end of the day, and gave gifts to everybody at the store.
Well, I didn't know that.
He wrote everybody's name, and then he had a nice little bird for everybody in the store. Ours are coming tomorrow because they weren't completely done.
That's cool.
But they're beautiful, and I think everybody was just was touched. So a thumbs up to Hector and Connie, and we're gonna have to see him for breakfast tomorrow, which is gonna be fun. Show him one of our favorite places to eat in Appleton.
We're going to the Queen Bee, and Brian's having a whitey. That's my prediction.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But anyway, you know, it's one of those places that if you don't know what exists, you're not going to go there, and you're going to end up going to some boring place. This is the local place. So
the bomb.
Shout out to our good friend Mike Kirk, who happened to be cruising through the area and stopped in just before close today, and we chatted about usual conversation about Parkers and Jotters, and I learned some interesting things I didn't know about Jotters, and talked about cars and all sorts of cool stuff. So shout out to Mike.
Mike's a
anybody else?
No, just Mike's a traveling salesman. And so his stories, when we have time to sit and have dinner with him, the stories he has about these total off the wall, off the beaten path places that he goes to and the things that he finds in the, you know, the stereotypical dusty back of the drawer kind of place. He's just found some amazing things. And so it's always a good time to see Mike and see what he's found lately. It's always torturing us with something.
He's a good hunter. He bought a couple of Jotters, and I actually gave him the slaughter box because he needed the room to fill with some other stuff. So anyway, mm-hmm. I think anything else for this week?
No, I think that's it. Our awesome staff, they just continue to impress us and bless us. So we've just got such a great team.
We do. Absolutely. I guess that's it. Check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, Periscope, and all our social media as Anderson Pens.
The blog is blog.andersonpens.com.
The website is andersonpens.com.
And have an awesome night.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We'll see you next week.